Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Shirakabrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer and Dr. Ersin Religioso. How are you guys doing today?
Good, Gene.
I'm doing great, Gene.
Ersin, did you dig yourself out of the 20 feet of snow yet?
Yeah, it was all gone. Basically, you know, 3 days after the second blizzard, it was about 65, 70 degrees. So then it was a flood watch. You know, we went from, you know, too much snow to too much water.
Wow. You just can't win.
No. Someone pretty much asked, why would you or anyone live there? And, you know, other than that, Buffalo is pretty awesome. But yeah, every couple decades we make international news. So
yeah, I'll take your word for that. I don't know if I'd ever describe Buffalo as awesome, but that's just me. So I hope everybody had a great holiday weekend, or however long you got to enjoy your holiday, whether you saw some family and watched some football, got some good food, and hopefully didn't bicker too much. I know we had a little break. Half of it was due to the holiday, half of it was because Sandy Hilton was just such an awesome podcast guest that we just needed to take a little break. Hashtag Pelvic Mafia. But we're back, and our topic today is exercise prescription or dosage. So we're not going to go into too much detail, and we'll leave that for the blogs and social media to hash out the details. But we do want to cover a few basics in understanding dosage. So I know a lot of people complain about the 3 sets of 10, 2 sets of whatever you do, essentially standardizing a dosage instead of listening to patients and understanding tissue physiology. So I'll throw out the first question, open-ended, and we'll go from there. I'll start with Joe and Ersin, definitely jump in. What do you look for when dosing a patient for exercise, Joe?
Well, you got to start with what is your goal with that exercise. So I think that's a very, very broad question to start with, but when I'm looking at dosing the exercise, I want to take into account what I'm trying to get out of it. Am I trying to work on activation? Am I trying to work endurance? Or is it an area where I'm actually trying to increase strength? And I think that those are different things. And if you're not thinking about what the goal of that exercise is and just blindly prescribing an exercise, then I think you're missing the point by a lot.
So there's the goal of the exercise, which can be accomplishing, you said, strength, endurance, and obviously that goes down to the tissue, and you have to understand tissue physiology. So Ersin, if you're doing exercises, whether it's a range of motion or it's strength or it's stability, are you keeping understanding of tissue in the back of your mind? Is it guiding what you're going to have the person do?
Well, I mean, like Joe said, basically, I think anytime I'm prescribing and exercising, and that's so broad, you also have to ask yourself, why are you doing this? And for me, I think most PTs fall into the general kind of, I'm just going to throw strengthening exercises at everyone, and they just use bands. And even though there's a good amount of research that shows, you know, strengthening exercises actually help for a wide variety of conditions, can even help prevent injury, I think many PTs think that strengthening is the only type of exercise. But, you know, a lot of times someone isn't even weak, they're just inhibited. And if someone is inhibited and you have to learn a new motor pattern, it's different than actually trying to hypertrophy tissue or you know, grow new sarcomeres in series, and then to grow actual girth of muscle, that takes a long time. But if someone is actually just immediately stronger or moves immediately better, that's a neurophysiologic change rather than a true physical change. But something like that needs to be kind of ingrained multiple times throughout the day versus, I think, like when PTs really fail to strengthen with a standard 3 sets of 10, they're not even really challenging the patient. So they're kind of accomplishing really neither. If it was an inhibition where they need to learn a new motor pattern, the prescription isn't enough, the dosage isn't enough, like the mode isn't right in terms of frequency throughout the day to get that motor pattern ingrained. And if it's a true strength issue, there's atrophy, they don't challenge the patient enough, whether it's a senior or just an athlete, they don't challenge the patient enough because they're not working at the edge of their ability. They're just kind of doing something that's almost too easy. That seems to be a thing common I find a mistake with most PTs.
Right. Many PTs. That's a great point. And strength, right, you have to kind of step back and figure out what strength is. And I always tell patients, kind of my saying is, there's a difference between being strong and having weakness or not being strong enough, right? If you're weak, it's a neurophysiological issue. There's something going on, versus if you're not strong enough, that's more of a performance issue. So strengthening patients, again, doing less reps, higher weight, versus, like you said, inhibition, retraining a motor pattern where the devil is in the details. And it that's my big pet peeve, is when I see, regardless of even the dosage, 3 sets of 10, 2 sets of 25, wherever it is, you know, PTs that turn around or PTs that aren't actually watching their patients doing these motor patterns and doing something well are two vastly different things. So if you're not watching the patients doing this properly, does it even matter what you're dosing?
Right. And the thing, with watching the patient, you can tell when somebody is working hard and when somebody is not working hard. And I don't need them to tell me on the RPE scale, but because I can see it. But I will ask them where they feel that they're working. It's important to get their input as far as what they think, because if you're right, if they're not being challenged, then you're not only are you not doing your job, they're not getting any benefit.
Right, and if somebody's in pain, that changes things drastically, right? Because you'll have pain inhibition, and there's certain things you can and can't do. And looking at the body, we're going to break it down into kind of tonic and phasic muscles. Yeah, tonic being slow twitch, phasic being fast twitch. And you're going to do different things which are going to cause different results, what you're trying to accomplish. So then we break it down into concentric and eccentric. And concentric and eccentric both bring their pros and cons and just resultant effects, with concentric exercise kind of having 75% of the O2 capacity versus eccentric exercise having 25%. So there's a lot of research on eccentric training to improve blood flow, to improve tendon health. And a lot of times, eccentric fatigue is not due to metabolic reasons because of the O2 consumption. It's usually due more to collagen fatigue. So when you're doing exercises, are you thinking about doing just concentric exercise, which doesn't really increase hypertrophy of the muscles, but it does increase capillary density? So if somebody's really injured and they're getting less blood flow to the area, that'll help it. Or are you doing concentric, eccentric, eccentric, eccentric? Do you guys switch those around at all with your patients?
I think it depends on, again, what the goal is. In general, if I'm looking at training for capacity or strength and performance, I'll do concentric, eccentric, or potentially eccentric, if depending on the exercise. Again, this is such a broad topic, but if it's more of a tendon health issue, that's pretty much when I just go eccentric, and then passive to reset back to the starting point. Because there is, like you said, a great amount of research for eccentric loading for tendinopathies. I do have another point to make after Joe goes about overtraining, which I think is another mistake a lot of PTs make.
So what about you, Joe? Eccentrics, concentrics, both, obviously dependent on the patient and their problem.
Right, and that's exactly it. It's dependent on the patient, but I do typically use a mix of both, and I think it's a more balanced program that way. If for no other reason than you're right, when you're doing eccentric work, you can do a little bit more work, and you don't necessarily feel like you're doing that much more at the time. You can almost use it in a way as kind of a break in a routine to mix it up and give variety to your patient. I prefer using both, but you're right as well with the tendinopathy. I do tend to preference eccentric contraction during those kind of injuries.
So, Urson, you're saying overworking, and that can have a lot of different, pathways to overwork a patient, whether it's delayed onset muscle soreness, or I don't know how many PTs still do it, but just unless it's post-surgical, and I know there's certain instances where you're isolating a certain joint or a certain muscle, but I think at this point, most of the literature shows that you want to combine movement patterns, and sometimes when a patient doesn't have a movement pattern and you initiate it, it can be pretty easy to overwork them if you're not watching their body mechanics, and again, kind of what we alluded to, understanding what you're really doing with the exercise, right?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of overwork, I would just say it's a mistake in prescription if you are doing any type of strengthening or even trying to correct motor patterns when someone's in pain, with the exception of someone who's maybe centrally sensitized and, you know, they can't reset their nervous system to normal pain and movement threshold, so they're always in pain. But you should probably make it a point that even if someone has constant pain, like true constant pain, that their pain shouldn't rise when they're exercising, because pain does affect motor control. And you guys have already both made the great point that, you know, it's not just one-on-one time just shouldn't be for manual therapy. It should be for exercise as well, because, I mean, someone could be doing pretty well when you're with them, but then as soon as you turn around, all of a sudden they don't even realize they're compensating, or they have a poor pattern, and then it's almost useless, because I'm a big believer in motor control. But what I was, because of that, what I was really saying is a lot of PTs, you know, say we're doing stability training or some sort of dynamic hops or just on a Dynadisc, but I mean the patient can't even do a single limb stance or, you know, single limb squats to like 10 degrees without having, you know, a lot of valgus, or even if they're single limb stance, like they have a lot of ankle stability or ankle strategy, and then you throw them on a wobble board. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me too, because they're not practicing at the edge of the ability. That's beyond their ability.
That's a great point, Urson. You got to walk before you can run, and it's our job to make that progression a smooth progression, and not to push somebody into an exercise that they're not ready for, because that to me is how people get injured in the first place.
Right. I think too many PTs don't regress, or they don't have a regression plan.
Right, and the breakdown of systems, right? Because the patient's going to depend visual, vestibular, or sensory motor. So if you don't have a good idea of how to differentiate those, or like you said, the balance dysfunction, whether it was a rolled ankle, they don't have proprioceptive input, and they switch from an ankle strategy to a hip strategy, and you're not picking it up, so they might be balancing on that wobble board, but they're swinging at the hips, you know, like they're dry humping the air, and you're like, well, they're balancing. Well, it's not the same, right? The quality of the balance is completely different. And it's not what the neurophysiological response should be to that balance. So when you're breaking down the patient, let's break the patients down into two categories. Let's say we have a hypermobility and a hypomobility. right? Somebody presenting with an instability, whether it's a spondylolisthesis or some kind of hypermobility systemic disorder, or just a jam joint or HNP for hypermobility or hypomobility. What are the two pathways in terms of differentiating exercises? So for hypomobilities, you want increased motion, taking them to their end range and slightly beyond that, versus hypermobilities, you want to exercise them within an available range and not bring them beyond that. So aside from Ersin, you mentioned, bands being used a lot. Do you guys use other exercises that are more hands-on, like a PNF, or, even watching them doing basic exercises? Because somebody asked, why do PTs do exercises that patients can do at home? There's a pretty big reason, because, again, doing something well and doing something are different, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think even with your standard exercises, tactile cueing is just incredible. A patient can perform a lat pull down and be pulling with his biceps, okay? Or you can give a little bit of a cue and have them really focus on scapular depression and retraction with that movement, and turn it into more of a lats exercise. Now, if you just say tell the patient to pull the bar down to your chin, he's going to do it however his body feels is most easy for him to do. Right. And I feel that if you're working that for somebody that you believe has poor scapular humor rhythm to begin with, then they're going to compensate any way that they can. And so I think that for any exercise, that tactile cue is just huge.
Yeah, I'm a huge
No, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of tactile cueing as well. And I use a lot of PNF, and I learned that from Institute of Physical Arts, because I think in PT school, one of the misconceptions is that PNF is for stroke patients or neuro patients, but, you don't use it in ortho, but I mean, PNF is just for anyone with a nervous system and skin pretty much, right? So I like PNF, but I also try to figure out like what type of learner the patient is, because they might be a visual learner, they might be an auditory learner, might be a tactile learner, and I think that depends, that makes me change my strategy as well, because you can touch a patient all you want, but if they're a visual learner, you might have to demonstrate the exercise for them so they can right. fire the mirror neurons a little bit. And if they're auditory yeah. learner, you might need to, just change your language a little bit.
Right, and PNF doesn't necessarily need to be laying down on the table. I mean, PNF can be standing, moving, incorporating motion into it while applying those cues. And I think that's the big thing people don't usually do with PNF, is incorporate that into weight-bearing movement exercises.
Yeah, and I really like PNF for when I have gained a new range, to have them really own that range of motion, okay? So any time that I've feel like I've gained new range in that in that treatment session, I want them to then be able to control limb, extremity, pelvis, whatever it is, I want them to be able to control it neuromuscularly. And I think that PNF is a huge resource for you when you gain new range.
Right.
Another resource, sorry, Ersin, cut you off. Another resource that I feel like a lot of PTs don't incorporate is a little thing called physics. And physics incorporates levers and speed. Right, because you can have the same exercise and change the lever of that exercise, and it becomes a whole different exercise in terms of the work that the person has to do and the activation of the muscles. So in my experience, I think a lot of people are short lever strong and long lever weak. And so then you can adjust that lever and see how they compensate, because daily life isn't always a optimal environment. People work and they do different motions in different different levers, meaning, you know, the lever arm is going to be different for different people at different times. So you need to see all of those instead of a controlled environment at all times. And same thing with speed. You can have the same exercise, doing it nice and slow to protect the nervous system and do the exercises. But then if you incorporate, like say, if you're working the lats, one of my favorite ones to do, Joe, is you can combine a straight bar, put it on two TheraBands or something like that. And so you're going to do a straight arm, kind of shoulder extension towards your thighs, right? So you pull it down nice and slow, but then you release it really fast under control and have them stop midway through that range and then bring it down again. So, I mean, you do that a couple times and you see, I mean, you're incorporating everything from the arms to the abdominals to your back stabilizers and doing it in a mini squat position. I mean, you can see how hard a person's working with speed. And again, you're working concentric, eccentric, and a long lever. Do you guys play around with levers and speeds?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought speed up. I don't think it's appropriate for every patient, but when you talk about increasing the speed of a concentric contraction, I feel that everybody tells you, you know, coming out of school, and you know, you want to keep that tempo consistent, slow, maintain control, and I think that when you do that, when you're using a sub max load, you're not training as hard. One way that you can increase the work is to increase that speed on a sub max load, and you're gonna draw in some of the bigger motor units that didn't have to work at that sub max load until you made them contract quickly and fast and really bring in those bigger, faster twitch fibers from those larger motor units. So it's a way to make a sub max load more beneficial for the patient.
Yeah, I play around with speed a lot too, but mostly, you know, I'm a fan of kettlebells, so I do swings. And you know, after reading a lot of Gray Cook stuff and doing some watching kettlebells from the ground up, one, two, like I started teaching even little old ladies how to deadlift with kettlebells and how to do swings. And I remember there's one old lady who just said, you know, she's in her 70s and she had this chronic knee pain. And after I wrapped her knee with an edge band and then I had her deadlift with a 20-pound kettlebell 50 times, she started crying because she was able to get out of a chair for the first time in like 10 years without knee pain. She's crying, gave me a hug.
Way to go, making old ladies cry again, Arson.
Yeah, I know. Well, this was tears of joy this time.
Sure. I believe
it wasn't just from looking at me or anything.
We'll take your word for that one.
Yeah.
So I think that's a brief synopsis, I think, of our points of view on exercise. Obviously, this is a topic we can talk hours and hours about, and we might still, right? But any final closing thoughts on exercise prescription?
I'd like everybody to try that. Go try to take a submax load and go ahead and lift it 10 times slow, and then go ahead and lift it 10 times concentrically as quick as you can. Keep the eccentric contraction controlled, but and see for yourself which one's harder, which one you feel gave you more of a workout.
How about you, Arson? Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just all about the clinical decision making and the thoughts that go behind it. I always want you to question yourself: why are you choosing this exercise for this patient at this given moment?
That's a great question. For some reason, I thought you're going to say, "I'm all about the base, no trouble." I don't know why.
No, more like shake it off.
I don't even know what that means.
All right, Gene, what do you got?
The number one song in the U.S. Have you ever heard of someone named Taylor Swift?
Who's he?
Gene.
Gene,
you're going to get hate mail on this one.
It's your ringtone, Gene. Don't lie.
In all seriousness, it's all four of my ringtones. I love me some T-Swizzle. Yeah. All right, that's going to get edited out. My final thoughts are that when it comes to exercise, that you need to, regardless of what numbers you're thinking, you need to understand that it all depends on the patient and how they're presenting to you, and that motor pattern trumps all. So if they're not doing it properly, and if their movement is being disrupted in any way, you're reteaching the nervous system a completely dysfunctional movement pattern, and your patient's only going to get stronger in a state of weakness, so they're going to be the best of the worst. So watch your patients, understand higher reps, more endurance, lower reps, more strength, but always have an idea of why you're doing it and what tissues you're working. Simple as that. So let us know. Let us know about some of your exercises, exercise thoughts, exercise physiology at therapyinsiders.com. You can comment on Urson's blog, themanualtherapist.com, and on Twitter. Urson, you have, I think, four or five Twitter handles.
Yeah, but my main one is at the underscore OMPT.
All right, or hit us up at Therapy Insiders. Joe, are you on Twitter yet?
Joe DPT.
Joe DPT. There you go. Let us know what you think on Twitter. We'll be on Reddit as well. And email is always therapyinsiders@gmail.com or Dr. E's email, which is on his blog, themanualtherapist.com. So let us know. We want to start a conversation about this. If you want to see anything, again, on the website, let us know. We'll make a video, and we'll go from there. So thanks for joining us, and hope to see you on the social media. Have a good one.
All right. Good night.
Good night.